Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of HP Critical. It's a podcast where my friends and I talk all things gaming. I am Jarrell. This is 2024, and I am joined by Brandon.
What's up?
And Christy.
Pika pika.
That was so cool. I loved y'all intros. So yeah, new year, new podcast. We did start the year off. We missed a few, but you know, we were sick. We were getting stuff together. We're here. We're ready to go. And we're ready to talk about some gaming news. A slight announcement. We're going to have possibly a sponsor later. So you might see some more sponsored content coming up soon-ish. Also, you might see us doing some smaller segments of things going forward. We got some plans in the works for some nice little mini episodes where we talk about some real fun stuff that's not necessarily gaming news. So hopefully look out for that in the future. But tonight we're going straight into the news. But actually, we're not going straight into the news. It's a new year. How you guys doing?
Hey, you know what? I'm doing a lot better now. I was not feeling well the last week, and that resulted in a not podcast that didn't happen. I mean, there's several reasons why it didn't happen, but I am thankfully feeling significantly better now. Jarrell has simultaneously saved and ruined my life by introducing me to a game called Paranorma Sites. It is basically all I've been playing the last week. I finished the Pokemon DLC. Like, I rolled credits and did what I wanted to do. I still have to finish the Pokedex, but doing what I want to do requires, like, playing with groups. So I've put it on hold for now. And so, yeah, that has been my major focus, Paranormal Sight. Go do that story.
Thank you. I just want everybody to hear that Brandon just said, go do that story. Because I have been yelling at all of them to play Paranormal Sight since I found out what a masterpiece it was. And I wrote about it on my Game of the Year list, and I talked about it on this podcast when we were talking about our Game of the Year, and I didn't emphasize enough how amazing that game is. I even told Brandon it probably is my Game of the Year from last year, even over Baldur's Gate 3. I kind of obsessed with it. It has everything I've ever wanted in a game. I did not rave about it enough. So 2024, I'm raving about Paranorma Sight, and I finally have a partner in this. So I'm not crazy and I'm not alone. I literally ask Brandon every day, how are you liking it? And because I'm just like, I am obsessed with that game. It's amazing.
For the listeners' point of reference, like, Jarrell has been... Let's put it this way. Jarrell's been like Goku from Dragon Ball Z, firing the beam by himself.
And now
I am like the Gohan teaming up. Actually, that's the opposite of what the comparison I'm making. Gohan fired first, and Goku came to help him. And now we're just both firing the brace of, like, Paranormal Sight at the world.
I have been I've been telling them also for listeners to play Yakuza Like a Dragon. They still haven't yet. But I was able to convince Brandon to do Paranormal Sight because it's short. It's like 11 hours long. It is worth... First of all, it's worth more than it costs right now. I would have paid a full $60 for that game. It's like $20.
In my defense.
Yeah, it's a cheap one.
You can even, like, I think it's on sale for like $13 or $14 right now.
Also, Drew, I had asked you like about like, oh, should I play this on Switch or something? I didn't even realize this
game is only on Switch or PC, I think.
It's Switch, PC, and I think there's a mobile port as well.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I was like, so I was like,
can't play it anywhere else if you wanted to.
PlayStation, no Xbox. So yeah, if you want to play it, I would highly recommend the Switch version. I think it's best because
it's
then you can
great.
Play it in the comfort of your hand, or if you feel like sitting down and just chilling and watching it on TV and you're watching the story unfold, which is what I'm going to do after this podcast. I'm going to grab some ice cream and play a little more before I go to sleep.
Yes. Christy, what about you? How's your year been? What you been up to? What you been, if anything,
I've
have
been
you
been
playing?
I've been dying from schoolwork.
Oh, no.
Dying from schoolwork. I mean, it's the reason why I haven't played Paranormal Sight. I've had it since, like, what, August?
Same. My next
You've had it since August?
Huh?
You've had it since August?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's been saying she's had it when it was on sale. She just hasn't played it. My next crusade.
I just haven't played it.
My next crusade is Yakuza Like a Dragon, because I know that you both will love it. Don't play the other one. Just play Like a Dragon, because if you try to do all of them, you're literally going to be playing for like a year.
It's so close.
Huh?
It's so close to Reload and then Rebirth.
Well,
where's my time?
I mean, I don't mean play it now. I just mean like that's the next game I'm going to. I want a crusade, basically. to get you guys to play great games. I've succeeded with Paranorma Sight. Next up is going to be Like a Dragon and then Infinite Wealth. I know you guys are going to play Rebirth, so I don't have to worry about that. But yeah, anywho, let's dive right into some gaming news. We're probably not going to do a lot because we just got back, so we'll teeter on things here and there. There's been quite a lot that's been going on, even though it's January. However, so some of this might be a little old. It's from earlier in January, just because we haven't had a podcast, so some of these things might have changed by now. Kelly wanted to talk about, unfortunately we didn't have a podcast, but Kelly really wanted to talk about the Final Fantasy 14 live letter, and anyone who watched it knows that FanFest happened in Tokyo, and it was as good as ever. I had mentioned to you guys in chat, specifically to Brandon, because the clue for what the next classes were going to be was Yoshida-san wearing a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle shirt, and I was like, the person that I know that knows the most about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is Brandon. So, Brandon, what could the job be? And, you know, we talked about it a little bit. That job has been revealed as Pictomancer, which I never would have guessed, although it is totally on the nose because all of them are named after artists, correct?
That is correct, yes. The Renaissance Masters.
Yeah, so, Pictomancer is the new, I believe it's a ranged magic DPS, and we got the new tank as well, which I can't remember the name of. Sorry, Kelly, I know I should know these things, but you should have come to the podcast. Oh, well.
Is it not called so Viper?
Is it? I think so, yeah. I think it's the Viper, yes.
Viper is the one with the two swords, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Brandon. Yes. Yeah, Viper and Pictomancer. You were saying something about Pictomancer, Chrissy?
Would Pictomancer play similarly to, like, the Bravely Default class?
Yes! Yes! I'm so happy you brought that up because, I was talking to, I think, a friend about, Pictomancer, and my reference for Pictomancer was Realm from Final Fantasy VI, and they brought up, the Pictomancer from Bravely Default, and I was like, oh my god, because there was a discourse about, like, oh, nobody knows what Pictomancer is. I was like, yes, they do. And you brought up what they brought up, which was from Bravely Default. So thank you. I completely... That blanked my mind. But yeah, we saw the live letter. We finally got the full trailer for Final Fantasy XIV. I'm going to, as usual, resub when the expansion comes out, because that's what I do. Resub, play the expansion, and then move on. Speaking of MMO-style things, I think that's it for Final Fantasy XIV. Actually, I'll save that for later. So next up, Twitch decided that it was going to reduce its workforce by 35%, in a move that would see around 500 workers lose their jobs. This was reported on by IGN as well as a couple of other places. And then Dextero went forward with a little more information than I'll be able to give you guys, where the Twitch CEO, Dan Clancy, said that we aren't profitable at this point and that Amazon has been extremely supportive of Twitch. He went live on Twitch to discuss the company following the layoffs that had come earlier in the week. Obviously, I can't play what he said currently, but I can try to sum it up for you. But for the most part, Clancy explained how the layoffs came as a result of Twitch's supposed overgrowth in recent years. This is from Dextero.com. The article is titled, Twitch CEO Dan Clancy says platform isn't profitable. Days after widespread layoffs, this is written by Brad Norton, and it says, just days after the Twitch laid off a reported 500 employees, CEO Dan Clancy broke his silence on the situation, streaming a live Q&A in which he detailed how the platform struggle for profitability led to the culling of the 500 workers. It equated to 35% of the company's total workforce. Of course, many people were shocked because it's how we started the new year in January with layoffs. There's going to be more layoffs that we're going to talk about in this podcast today. January 11th was the broadcast where he did a live Q&A, which, I mean, I guess, I don't know how I feel. Before I continue, how do you guys feel about a CEO doing a live Q&A after laying off 35% of their workforce?
Tone deaf doesn't even begin to describe that, man. Just like, that's all I can say about it, because, yeah, it's...
I guess if people have questions, right? Like, if they hear it and they have questions and there's bad press, I guess you do a live I guess you could also just do a video. I guess you do. I don't know. See, at first I was like, I don't know if that's a good idea because I would hate to have gotten fired and then see the CEO go and do a live Q&A session about me being fired. But then I also guess, like, how else would we get the information about why people were fired? But then also, I don't like it because that kind of gives them an opportunity to explain away why they decided to cut 35% of their workforce, like it's okay when it's really not. I don't know. I actually don't know how I feel about it. I don't think I like it. Anyway, he explained how the layoffs came as a result of Twitch's supposed overgrowth in recent years. Quote, in terms of making the decision, we need to make sure Twitch is the right size so we can be here for a long time, he began. We have a very important mission. It's critical Twitch is not just here today, tomorrow, but 50 years, 100 years from now. Our job is to run Twitch in a manner to ensure its prosperity and that it can be here for the communities you've built. While admitting the layoffs were a significant blow on a personal level, as many Twitch staff also house their communities on the platform, Clancy claimed the workforce simply grew too large in recent years. The bottom line is we were bigger than we needed to be. In terms of the size, we needed to be the service we needed to be to service your needs. Speaking from his experience in the CEO role, he detailed how tech companies supposedly sized their organization for where they might be in 3 or 4 years. This is allegedly how Twitch functioned at the height of the global crisis a few years prior. Now, a few years removed from that point in time, it became clear that they scaled incorrectly. According to Clancy, quote, we need to run the company based on where we're at today. So essentially, what he was saying was, like, they when they first did Twitch, they kind of overhired because they thought in 3 to 4 years they would be at a certain place, and now that the time has come, they've re-evaluated where they were or where they are and decided that their workforce was too big. The CEO also shared the company isn't turning a profit at this stage. Quote, I'll be blunt, we aren't profitable at this point. So while Twitch still has enough resources to operate moving forward, he admitted the company won't be able to do as much as it could have done before. Ultimately, that's pretty much what happened. I think the biggest part of this is that I didn't know that Twitch wasn't profitable. I don't know if you guys had any inkling of Twitch not being profitable. But I think that kind of put things into perspective, but I still think it's not okay. So anyway, how are we feeling about Twitch laying off 500 workers, roughly 500 workers? Or his excuse, or the reasoning.
I will say I didn't realize that Twitch was at the point where they were just not making a profit right now. That's new information. And, like, I just feel like there has to be another solution to this, especially starting the year off with it. It just feels so grimy to just, like, to make that many cuts. Like, I just feel like there had to have been another way. It's a real problem that had to be addressed. Certainly, I can understand that much, but, like, it just feels like so many CEOs, that seems to be, like, their
answer.
Letting so many people go should be a last resort, and it always just feels like it's the first resort for so many CEOs, and that's something that I would wish changed.
Yeah, I completely agree. 100%. Any thoughts on that one, Christy?
No. Just the same with Brandon.
Yeah, I think I didn't know Twitch wasn't profitable, but I guess it's kind of, to me, even hearing that it's not profitable, it's kind of like in the same place as Game Pass. Like, Microsoft knows Game Pass is still not profitable, but I mean, it's something that keeps, like, they're doing something that keeps bringing people to their platform. And one thing I like that they're doing is game previews. And I said I was going to say this for later, and I still will. But that was how I first tried out Disney Dreamlight Valley. You know, like, I had Game Pass, and it was on there for free as a game preview. And that's when I knew it wasn't for me. But the same thing with Pal World. Like, the only way I'm able to play Pal World currently is through Xbox Game Pass game preview. Like, I think they're doing great things over there, even though they're not profitable. I think Twitch can be a good platform for people to use, and sometimes it is, even though it's not profitable. So yeah, I guess thanks Amazon for letting them subsist. I mean, you can't, it's weird because you can't really just get rid of Twitch because it's grown so big, right? Like, there is no real competition for Twitch currently. Everything that was competing is kind of just gone. And the next best thing you have is YouTube, but not a lot of people like YouTube and how it works. And most people use both. So there's no place where you get rid of Twitch, I don't think. Like, people's jobs are literally streaming now. So there's no real way to get rid of Twitch. But I don't, yeah, I guess I don't know how you, how, if you're over, if you have way too many people and you're not profitable, I don't know what to do. I just, I agree with you, Brandon. I don't like that. It seems to be a first choice, letting staff go. So anyway, moving on, Stephanie Tyler Jones called out a very creepy Spider-Man fan. She said, she's, by the way, the face model for Mary Jane in the Insomniac Spider-Man games. She said, quote, "I appreciate the love for my role in the Spider-Man games. Over the weekend, some followers crossed boundaries. One even went to the extent of calling my workplace and leaving multiple voicemails, which is unacceptable and considered stalking. I came into work this morning and immediately felt unsafe and uncomfortable hearing those voicemails. Please respect that I am a human being trying to make a living just like you, and I kindly ask for boundaries not to be crossed." This was a tweet from Culture Crave where they had more of her entire comment there. So I want to ask you guys, aside from this person just being completely creepy, what do you think actors can do in a situation like this to protect themselves? Because for her, she isn't even the voice actress for Mary Jane. She literally is just the capture actress, right? And she goes to her normal job after this, and then she's being stalked, which is wild enough. But, like, what do you guys think? Is there any way to protect actors from something like this?
Stop being creepy, please.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, like, that'd be the legit, super just awesome. stop being creepy.
Yeah, that's... I don't have really an answer, like, besides the obvious one. Just, yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess she could go to the court system, but then those take forever. But still, it's like... I guess what they could do is, like, maybe, like, get a security for her, but then I feel like that would be a bit, I don't know, actually, besides the obvious of, like, really just don't be a creeper and don't stalk people.
Yeah. 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 When I read that, I was like, dang, like, she's just, like, the face. Like, she's not even, like, she's not the voice actress, she's not a developer, like, she just literally came in, was the model, did her job, and went off to, like, be a regular person doing a regular job, just trying to live. And then, like, I wanted to talk about it because I thought that was so unique, in the sense of, I've never heard of just, like, a visual actor who's not even, like, voice acting the character being stalked. Like, that's a first for me, and I'm so sorry for her, and I think people, I agree, should stop being creepy. So we got some rumors about the Nintendo Switch 2, supposedly supposed to launch September 2024. AI Shark had a press release, and they had mentioned that it was coming out September 2024. Later on, they came out and said, that was just an estimate. You guys took it way too far. We didn't actually mean it. Sorry. But I included it anyway, because we get these rumors every year about a Switch 2. And the question posed to you guys by Gabe was, is it finally happening or more empty rumors? This is before we knew. But now that we know that that's not true, do you guys think that 2024 is the year of the Switch 2?
I don't know. I'm still waiting to see that rumor is true about, you know, Final Fantasy VII Remake being a launch title for the Nintendo Switch 2.
So you think it's coming then?
I don't know at this point. I just want to see if it's actually happening. But at the same time, it's Nintendo. Who knows?
They still
I feel like
been...
that.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No.
Oh, I was about to say, I'm like, well, if they wanted to launch a new console, they could totally do it with the Princess Peach game that's coming out in March. That's like a prime time. You sell the Peach game and you bundle it with a Nintendo Switch 2 and be like, hey, look at the graphics. It's so pretty. And also, Princess Peach has her own game.
I disagree. I don't think you start with Princess Peach. Only because, do you think that Princess Peach is going to sell, like, a Breath of the Wild 3? Like, or the next Mario or Zelda game? No, yeah, for sure. I mean, I am one of those people. I agree. Like, yes, she should. I just don't know that, like, a Peach game is the game to start your Switch off with. But the only other thing I was going to say was that, Remake is still not on PC, right?
Remake?
Yeah.
It's on Steam.
It is on PC, but... Oh, no! Remake and Integrate are both on PC. Disregard.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Brandon? Are we getting a Switch 2 this year?
I feel like there's enough smoke that there is legitimately fire there. There's been these, like, backroom reports for the longest. So many people who are either in the industry or, you know, YouTubers and podcasters talking about it, all seem to be in just an agreement that this seems to be the year that is coming out. So I feel, I'm just at the point where I feel like the chances of it coming out this year are larger than the chance of it not coming this year. Obviously, it could go either way, but I think it's more likely that it will. As far as timing, I do not believe that, considering we're almost at the end of January, I do not believe we're going to have a repeat of what we had with the Switch where, you know, we got that big blowout in January of the January of 2017, and then it came out early March. I think it's too late for that. So I don't think it's coming out in March. I don't think it's even going to come out in quarter one. But I do think there's a... I also don't think it's going to be coming out quarter four. Like, I think the game industry are starting to learn that you don't necessarily need to launch your console in the holiday season, because in the holiday season, the console will sell regardless. So it just makes more sense to come out with it earlier, have stock, and let that initial launch hype sell your product. And then, if anything, the holidays could be a prime time to restock and sell more. So I think realistically, if Switch 2 does come out this year, we are going to see it in either quarter two or quarter three. Though I am leaning a little more toward quarter three. I feel like there's a non-zero chance we may get some kind of big reveal for the system. I'm going to ballpark April or May. April or May, we may get like a reveal of it. And then it may come out as early as another ballpark September. And the only reason I'm saying these months specifically is you just mentioned Princess Peach Showtime. That's coming out in March. That's kind of like the last game that they revealed that's, you know, slated for Switch with a solid date. Because we know Paper Mario is also coming out this year. Luigi's Mansion is coming out this year. But those don't have dates. Well, Luigi's Mansion is summer. That's all we know about that. And then Paper Mario has no date aside from 2024. So that does open up the possibility of them having some bigger titles for a potential new console past March. And they can start really ramping up marketing for that system. And then we will see how their launch strategy goes from there.
They'd also be able to use the Summer Games Fest as a good marketing tool, too, to market a new console.
Which would be a great idea. Would they, though? I don't know. I mean, they should, quite frankly. But who knows? It is a new console, so you would think that having as much marketing opportunity as possible would be good. But I've just... You know, with the death of E3, I think, you know, the big three and the third parties are starting to realize that, well, mostly the big three, since they're the ones that released the consoles, that they're realizing that when you want to sell a console specifically, you want to have the spotlight to yourself. I think that they're at a point where they don't want to share that anymore. And Summer Game Fest is going to have a lot of announcements. No question about that whatsoever. And so while I think it would be a good idea to advertise some Switch 2 stuff there, Nintendo just may not see it that way. Maybe they'll just want to maybe reveal something in June, but maybe not necessarily on Summer Game Fest. It's just a possibility.
I think they're not going to have a Switch 2 this year.
Really?
Yeah, I think we've seen years similar to this, which I have to ask you guys because you would know much more than I would about Nintendo release schedules and stuff. But I think we've seen similar years where we've only had like one or two announced games with dates. And then we even like last year we were all like, what's happening, like, what's coming next for Switch. So there have been
times
where we have no idea. Like, there's nothing on the slate until we see a direct, and then we're like, oh, okay, there's actually stuff coming, and then that stuff is coming 2 to 3 months from like the release date. So I kind of don't put stock in not having games lined up, because I'm even last year they really didn't have anything lined up, and then it was like, hey, here's all these games. And I haven't heard, like, until I get closer to hearing something from Nintendo that's believable. I know that's just basically like when they announce it. I'm kind of just like, I don't believe it until they announce it at this point, because we've been doing this for years and the Switch is still selling really well and it's doing really well and it looks really good and it feels good still. And I would believe that they would do an iteration before they did. And they just did, right? We got the OLED Switch now. And how many years into the Switch's life did we get the OLED?
4.
So it's like, OLED's only 3 years old, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The OLED's only 3 years old. So, like, if we were talking OG Switch being 7 years old now, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I believe 100% it's time, and I feel like they know it's time. But with the OG Switch, I mean, with the OLED only being 3 years old, we still have, like, a bunch of designs for the Switch, and we've got games that look as good as they do on the Switch, right? Like, think of last year, January's Engage. We all talked about how amazing that looks on OLED, right? Octopath Traveler 2 looks amazing on OLED. The Princess Peach Showtime is going to look amazing. We just talked about that one. I don't see the need for a new Switch console 3 years into the OLED's life in 2024. So, you know, the only thing I would say is, like, their cloud gaming sucks. So, like, if they were to need to upgrade the system due to cloud gaming or something, fine. But I don't even feel like there's that many cloud gaming games that really people are, like, out there demanding, we need a new Switch to play these games. And you know, companies are finding ways to work with what the Switch has. Nier Automata on Switch, not cloud gaming, like disc version or cartridge version, like things like that are being done on that 3 year old console. So I'm not convinced that we're getting a Switch 2 this year. Huh?
Give me a native port of Kingdom Hearts.
Yes, we would all like a native port of Kingdom Hearts. But yeah, I don't think I'm officially convinced yet that there's going to be a Switch 4 this year. I hope I'm wrong. I'm ready. I'm 100% ready for something more than But like, I played, you know, you guys, you, Brandon, you're playing Paranormasite. That looks great. It plays great. Like, I just played Paranormasite, like, last year. It's great. The Pokemon DLC, it, like, doesn't look great. Like, but that's, you know, that's Pokemon. That's not the Switch. But it does look great when you're talking to NPCs. Like, I was talking to Lacey yesterday. And I was like, this game's beautiful when you don't zoom out. And you're not, like, in the wild. Like, when you're just talking to people or doing, like, specific story battles, the game is gorgeous. Like, I think it looks amazing. Now, when you go outside, it's a little different. But, like, I was literally marveling at what that game looked like when I was talking to Lacey yesterday while playing the DLC. And that's Pokemon, which is notoriously, like, it's notorious. I'll leave it at that. So, yeah, I'm not convinced. Hopefully I'm wrong. I'm ready for one. But I just think
I'm not in a rush for all the reasons that you've said. Like, I'm still very much enjoying my Switch. I think it still has some good life ahead of it.
Yeah.
That being said, I'll be happy when the next one comes, because I would want to see what it can do. And, you know, there's always that new console hype. So
yeah, of course.
I suppose we'll see. We're also in a different. We haven't seen this kind of Nintendo in a while, where they can afford to take their time. Because, as your point, Switch is still doing extremely well. So they have no reason to kneecap their sales. Wii U, obviously, was a very different story. They could not move on to the next generation fast enough because of how bad the Wii U sold. And the Wii, as good as the system sold, its attach rate near the end was getting pretty low. So they were also in a rush to get to the Wii U because of that situation. And then, of course, GameCube was also not one of the best-selling systems. And then 64 was... You know, Nintendo hasn't been in a situation where their home console hasn't been like the top dog in a while.
Yeah.
So they can finally announce that at their own leisure. They don't have to like scramble to make sure people know what's coming out next, because a lot of people are just happy with what they have now. Even the ones that are asking for the next console are arguably probably still enjoying
games like me.
They have on the Switch.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying Golden Sun.
Yeah, and then that's another thing. Like, we're still getting things like Golden Sun and Golden Sun 2 on Nintendo Switch Online in 2024. Like, things that people really want to play are still coming out. Like, are we still maybe going to get, you know, GameCube games? We don't know. That might be later down the line this year, right? They might surprise us with that.
Can we get Hamtaro Ham Heartbreak?
I hope so. Just for you, I hope so.
Hamtaro Ham Heartbreak and Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories for the Game Boy Advance.
I was talking to Christy about it. Surprisingly, for those who don't know, I believe there is one Hamtaro Game Boy Color game and two on the Game Boy Advance that are actually published by Nintendo. So those are not outside the realm of possibility of coming to NSO. I'm just saying.
And the other thing that doesn't have me convinced is that, and I know there are different departments, but Nintendo's doing a lot. They're opening another, what is it, Donkey Kong World?
Yeah, they're opening up the Donkey Kong Kingdom.
Yeah, they're doing Donkey Kong Kingdom. They're opening that museum in Japan. They're having the success of the Mario movie, which was ridiculous. They're working on a Legend of Zelda film. Like, there's so many different Nintendo things going on around, like, everywhere, that I think what you would do, right, is capitalize on, like, I would wait until the Zelda movie was ready, and then I'd be like, boom, new Zelda game, new console, go watch the movie, here's the sequel to the Mario movie that did so well that everybody loves. Like, I just don't think they're in a rush, like you mentioned, Brandon. I feel like they have a lot of different things going on outside of the Switch, right? Like, that people are anticipating. I don't think they're in a rush. I don't see it this year.
Last word I'll say. Last word I'll say on the subject is, even when the successor inevitably comes out, Nintendo has historically supported the past generation for a little while afterwards to help the transition and because the system so well. Like, 3DS, for better and worse, was still selling some games into the Switch life cycle. And I would say at least in the first year of Switch's life, 3DS still had a few games that did some numbers, like Pokemon Ultra and Fire Emblem Echoes. Once we got to 2018, those 3DS sales were just like going down. But at least for the first year, for that transitionary, 3DS was still something that Nintendo prioritized. So, especially if there's backwards compatibility, I do believe Switch games will still continue to come out even when the next console comes out. However long that lasts, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But Switch is not going anywhere, even if the new console is.
I made that face because I made a face for listeners of me thinking really hard, because you reminded me when we were talking about, Brandon and I were talking about Keldeo because we were doing Pokedoku. And I was like, I have a Keldeo, and I don't know where my Keldeo is. So I have to plug up my Switch, not my Switch, my 3DS, before like February something, when they stop the transfers from bank to home. So I have to go on there and find my Pokeball Pattern Vivillon and my Keldeo. I believe so, and for bank, not for home, from bank to home, like, it's going to be done in February, I believe. Like, the service for Pokemon Bank is going to be over, because it's only on the 3DS. And I think we thought it was going to be done when they closed the 3DS eShop, but I think it's still open until, like, February. So I have my Meloetta somewhere, I have my Keldeo somewhere, I have my Pokeball Pattern Vivillon in there somewhere. I'm just like, I need to turn my Switch on, but I don't have my 3DS. I don't actually have my 3DS right now. It's at my partner's house, so I need him to bring it over here so I can get my Pokemon before it's too late. And I just remembered. So PSA, get your Pokemon before sometime in February. I think it's like February 20th. I don't know, but get them into bank and transfer to home before it's too late. Because I went into home and I was like, where are all of my Pokemon? So thank you, Brandon, for messing up on that Pokedoku that day, because it reminded me of Keldeo.
My failures serve the purpose. Just like when you get a bad ending, you turn it over.
Okay, sorry. But yes, thank you, Brett. So, short story, Brandon was playing Pokedoku that day, and I think the question was, name a legendary trio. And you put Cobalion?
I put Cobalion because I assumed they considered the Swords of Justice a trio, but they do not.
And then I was like, maybe it's because of Keldeo. And then I was like, oh my god, where's my Keldeo? So thank you, Brandon, because I really would have just forgotten. Anywho, Discord also laid off 17% of its staff. I'm sorry. This was over from IGN.com by Michael Kripe. And they did confirm to IGN that they laid off 17% of their staff, which was another layoff in January. The CEO, Jason, says that the cuts, which will affect 170 people across the business, are being made in an attempt to sharpen our focus and improve the way we work together to bring more agility to our organization. I don't know what that means, but end quote. And another quote. Today, we're making the unfortunate and difficult decision to reduce the size of Discord's workforce by 17%. This means we're saying goodbye to 170 of our talented colleagues. This is a decision we do not take lightly, but it is one that we have conviction in to better serve our users, our business, and our mission over the long term. The memo goes on to explain that the business has to face some hard truths, which include the fact that it has grown by 5 times since 2020. It adds, as a result, quote, as a result, we took on more projects and became less efficient in how we operated. Discord is offering affected staff a sizable runway as they are removed from the rosters, which includes 5 months of salary, as well as an additional pay for each full year served, 5 months of benefit continuation, access to modern health through 2024, and more. Yeah, so they got at least some form of something for getting let go. But I think I just find it interesting that they grew 5 times and still let people go.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's better than, you know, being let go and given nothing.
Gotta have that agility, man.
I don't get the reference.
What they just said is just like, oh, we are cutting out. I don't want to misquote, but basically the word they used was,
well, it allows
us to focus and have more agility. I'm just like, yeah. We gotta cut them out to have more agility. Bro, this is not a fucking RPG, bro. People's lives are at stake.
God.
People's lives are at stake, bro. Like, don't cut power to increase agility instead.
I don't know if it's in here, actually. But is it? Let me check really quick if it's in here. It's not in here. Oh, it is in here. Never mind. It is in here. So I'll get to it in a second. So Epic's Tim Sweeney has pledged more legal action as the U.S. Supreme Court rejects Apple's lawsuit appeals. We talked about this quite a lot. Apple and Epic Games lawsuit that has been settled, and apparently Epic is taking them back to court. So the article settled. Epic's Tim Sweeney pledges more legal action as U.S. Supreme Court rejects Apple's lawsuit appeals. This is written by Matt Wales for Eurogamer.net. And I'll give you guys a little bit of his article. It says, Epic Games boss Tim Sweeney has vowed more legal action against Apple just days after the U.S. Supreme Court discussed both parties' further attempts to appeal a 2021 California court ruling on the Epic versus Apple antitrust lawsuit. So they're both trying to appeal the ruling. Epic initially launched court proceedings against Apple in 2020 after the company revoked Epic's Fortnite developer account, preventing the game from being distributed on its devices when you couldn't play Fortnite on your iPhone. Apple made the move after Epic deliberately circumvented contractually mandated App Store payment mechanisms within its Fortnite iOS app, which would have allowed it to avoid Apple's 30% platform fees. So, short version, Epic agreed to be on the Apple Store. The agreement means that you have to give 30% of the revenue of what you make to Apple. They put in a way to avoid paying that 30% and were therefore getting the full 100%. Apple was like, that's not how this works. You voided our contract. Now we're taking Epic Games and Fortnite off of the App Store. That is what happened. A decision on Epic's lawsuit came in September 2021 when Judge Gonzalez-Rogers ruled against Epic in 9 of its 10 claims, determining the company had failed to prove Apple held a monopoly as defined by antitrust laws, because their argument was that Apple's a monopoly. They shouldn't own this much of the mobile gaming service side of games. And they didn't prove that. Gonzalez-Rogers did, however, side with Epic in one matter, ruling that Apple could not block developers from linking out to alternative payment methods from within their apps, a practice known as anti-steering, as that would constitute anti-competitive conduct. So he also said, but they can't stop you from giving links outside of Apple so that they can make money outside of Apple. So that was the ruling. Since then, Apple and Epic have been embroiled in appeals, neither party happy with the decision. But after the U.S. Ninth Court, Circuit Court of Appeals ruled to uphold the lower's court 2021 verdict last April, Epic and Apple both petitioned in the U.S. Supreme Court to throw out the decision, and those requests have now been rejected. Following this, Tim Sweeney took to social media to declare the court battle to open iOS to competing stores and payments is lost in the United States, calling it a sad outcome for all developers. Apple has been forced to begin allowing iOS developers to include metadata buttons, external links, and other calls to action for direct customers to purchase things outside of Apple. Like, they have to now allow it. So they've begun doing that. And they're mandating developers still pay a 27% commission on proceeds made via those external links. So they're still like, hey, you can do this, but we're still getting 27% of whatever goes out of that. They've also implemented a full screen notification warning app users that they're not responsible for the privacy or security of purchases made on the web. So one of the big things that Apple tried to do was say, if we allow these people to add external links to make payments, that means they're going outside of the Apple ecosystem, and that means that they're no longer protected. If you're playing the game through Apple, all of your secure information is protected because you're not going to an outside source. Once you click on that outside source, if your credit card information is stolen because you've gone through a link from somewhere else, Apple would usually be, you know, held responsible, and they're saying, hey, in our contract, we are not responsible for if anything like this happens. And that was the whole point of their argument, saying, hey, one of the reasons we do this is for security purposes. We don't want our users to come up with any type of issues. However, Tim Sweeney obviously is not happy, calling Apple's fees an anti-competitive new 27% tax that kills price competition. He also said that there are disadvantages and a scare screen. He calls their warning message a scare screen that disadvantages developers, because the warning message that pops up when you're going to pay for money externally, because he's saying once people see that big scary warning message, they're probably going to be like, I don't want to spend money anymore. I'm scared. What if they steal my identity or blah, blah, blah. To make this short, basically, he goes on to say that he is going to take Apple back to court and they're going to continue this battle because it's for the people. And that's me paraphrasing. And what I wanted to bring up about this story is you guys' thoughts on Epic laying off its staff and then going into what could potentially be another expensive lawsuit.
I guess
that's a bad look.
It's a terrible look.
But remember, this lawsuit is for the players.
What about for your employees? What about for your employees who are
developing the game? I love how me and Chrissy were completely in sync in that sentence, basically. Epic, for the players, not for the employees.
Well, I guess that's that.
There you go. There you go. You got your new logo, Epic. You can PayPal us.
Speaking of things that are not for the employees, or rather, not for the players, because I feel like we're done with that one. Everyone's just like, Epic, what the fuck? A Dragon Infinite Wealth, even though I was just talking about how great Like a Dragon is, Yakuza Like a Dragon, because it is a great game, okay? You should still go play it. It's still a great game. You can buy it on sale, you know, for not a lot of money. Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth is limiting New Game Plus to its more expensive editions. on their official website. New Game Plus mode is mentioned as a perk if you decide to buy the Deluxe or Ultimate Edition digitally. This is from IGN.com. I'm not going to read this article. It's pretty self-explanatory. So I'm going to ask you guys, for specifically or in general, the feeling of relegating something like a New Game Plus to a more expensive version of the game, something notoriously known as a reward for finishing the game, and an incentive to play more. How do you guys feel with that being locked behind a paywall?
Oh, that's scummy, bro. Yikes. I'm not a fan at all of
come on, Sega.
A basic gameplay feature being put behind a paywall. Obviously, there have been stuff like, well, I say stuff like this, but nothing quite like this. Like stuff like, say, certain games will offer, if you have like a deluxe edition, they'll be like, hey, free digital soundtrack. Well, not free digital, but digital soundtrack included with deluxe purchase. That's usually like a separate download or something like that. Or maybe you'll get some extra skins or something like that. In the case of the latter, that's just cosmetics. It's not a huge deal if you don't miss that, because it's just like, hey, if you really like the game, maybe you'll just buy it early to get some cool skins or get a nice soundtrack, to my former example. But no, absolutely not, bro. I cannot condone locking behind you have the feature made clearly. So to tell people you can't have it if you're just buying the regular version, it's almost like you're telling them that they don't care enough if they haven't bought the regular edition, that they're only going to play the game once. And that's really scummy and point and finger pointy to say. Like, I don't approve of that, man. Just like bonus stuff or DLC, whatever. But a basic gameplay feature, absolutely not. Especially when you see so many games doing that. Just like, if they don't have something at launch, it'll be just kind of like a free update later on down the road. Like, what comes to mind is Sonic Frontiers. That game had a lot of quality of life updates, and it was all free. It even had a story DLC for that game was also free. So if they're going as far as to like put in actual DLC with their quality of life improvements for no charge, the idea that you have to pay more just to have a new game plus is nothing. I just can't be convinced otherwise that it's not scummy.
Sega did go on to clarify and say that, quote, New Game Plus is indeed only available with the Master Vacation Pack. So Sega was like, yeah, we said what we said. I just find this so funny because I think the biggest incentive for replayability for a single player game is New Game Plus. So it's like, why is that the thing that y'all are not giving people? Like, out of all the things you could have given your players, do you not want them to continue? Like, you have over 100 hours, according to the creator, you have over 100 hours of content in Infinite Wealth. And you don't want to give people a sense of replayability? Like, replayability is a big thing for some people. Not for me personally, because I don't replay games. Even with New Game Plus, like, I'm done. I have, like, a huge backlog, as I'm sure you guys know, because you also have backlog, so it doesn't affect me, but I just think it's such a weird thing, because it's one of the reasons that, like, your game has longevity, right? Like, if people love it that much, and there's stuff they want to go back and do and explore, they're gonna start a New Game Plus. For you, it's just like you're hurting the people that literally like your game. Like, I don't get it. Like, if they want to, if they liked it enough to replay it, but they can't, like, you're hurting the wrong people. Sega, what you doing?
Such a weird business decision. Like, I don't get it.
Now they didn't.
Kingdom Hearts 3 charged for their New Game Plus and or critical mode that they added for free.
I mean, we just got that a free DLC for God of War, right? That people were like, "Oh, that's amazing! Yeah. That's great."
That's a weird example, because they could have charged for that.
Yes, literally could have charged for it,
but they chose to make it free. Which that's a weird exception on the positive side, I would say.
And, you know, Final Fantasy 16 is another example that has New Game Plus, but specifically because the way that game is structured, you know, you get some I don't want to spoil anybody, but you get some stuff towards the end of the game that you might want to go back and have fun with. Like, you might want to create commas. You might want to try to do hunts that you didn't get to finish. Like, imagine if Square was like, and what if they do? Like, they see this on Sega and they're like, yeah, okay, well, next time we're also going to charge for New Game Plus. Anyway, Sega did not specify about the physical copy of Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, aside from the pre-order incentives that you obtain. The Master Vacation bundle is not a part of the physical version.
So that's even worse then, because if people want to get it physical, this is just something they cannot get. Unless the game offers the digital upgrade, which some games do. Some games do. Like, if you had decided to buy the physical lesser version, but you want the benefits of the deluxe version, you can do a digital upgrade. So some games do offer that.
Yeah. And to be fair, we don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't. But I would hope that at the very least they offer that. Because, again, I'm not defending it, because I'm very adamant that I don't think this should be tied to a paywall. However, it wouldn't be quite as bad if, like, to your point, Jarrell, like, if someone was buying, like, a Dragon Infinite Wealth, they only bought the base version because they weren't sure how much they were going to like it. Come to play a few hours of the game, realize, oh my god, I absolutely love this game. I don't want it to end. Finish the game, and that feeling persists. They have the option to like upgrade to get that new game plus. Again, not defending it, but if that's at least an option.
Like that, it sounds like you're just paying for extra DLC, which doesn't make it sound as bad. But it's still bad. But like that makes it not sound as bad.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It is bad. Yeah. It is bad. But it'd be the lesser of two evils to at least have that option is the only point I'm trying to make.
What are you saying, Chris?
Let's not have that option. Let's not have that option so other companies don't follow Sega.
Yeah, let's just have it, you know, for free as usual. And, you know, just the icing on the cake here, as a reminder, the standard edition is going to be $70. The deluxe edition is $85, and the ultimate edition is $110.
$110.
That's a lot of money for New Game Plus, is all I have to say.
$110?
Yeah. Yep. I think because I wasn't thinking about the base game already being $70. I feel like now that we've already come to a point where these games are $70, not including things after having to pay $70 is much harder than, you know, that $10 goes a long way. Okay, like, 60 to 70, that is $30 away from 100 for a base game. Like, you're, and that's before taxes, if you gotta pay taxes in your state. Like, that's, that's less than $30 away from $100 for a base game. You know, 40 is closer to 50. I'm doing weird math here, but 40 is closer to 50. So, like, You spend. It feels like you're spending less when you're paying $60. But now with that increase to $70 per game, this is just me talking shit. But now with that increase to $70 per game, plus tax, and I can't get New Game Plus, bitch. Like, really? I feel like I'm paying for it.
You know what? Why doesn't Sega just get more greedy? Let's make an $120 version called. Called the Nudist Beach Edition, where you can, if you choose, play the whole game as naked Ichiban.
Wow,
like he was in that trailer.
It's okay if the game doesn't do well. It's a toggle when you start a new game.
Both of you are correct.
This is terrible.
They'll just milk Persona 5 until it's like. There's nothing left.
And that, you know, I've already talked about how much I love Persona 5 and how I'm, what's the word? Oversaturated? It's not the word I'm looking for, but it'll work. I love Joker. I was so excited when he got announced for Smash, and now I'm just like, oh my god, let that boy rest. Like, jeez, let them all rest. Tactica.
You're right.
Just came out a couple months ago.
You're right. We should get Persona 5 the Phantom X mobile game brought over, because that doesn't have Joker as the main character, so he gets the rest technically.
Nah, because you can literally just pull him as like, because it's a gacha game. You can literally just pull him, and then he's not resting anymore. He's back to work.
I'll pull him and just let him rest.
Then what's the point of pulling him if you're not going to use him? Because, like...
To show him off.
Okay, fine. Hopefully you pull it's him like, for free.
It's like when Christy and I would do the Pokemon playthroughs. We would catch a Pikachu, and they would be on our team for a little while. And then we're like, you know what? Pikachu's going to go take vacation now, so it can go rest while he's on
it the Pokemon. It sounds like you're sending your Pikachu in the fields to go shoot it. Like, it sounds like you're killing it. Pikachu's going to go take a little rest. Don't worry.
Listen.
Don't look.
It is going at a beach. It is enjoying a nice fountain drink.
Yeah, it after surfing. It's dead. That's literally what it sounds like.
It is. I can't remember if in Pokemon
this is in Mika's. This is what y'all sound like. I was actually going to talk about Power World. I was going to talk about Power World.
Sparky is on a nice beach. I believe you. Alcoholic drink.
I believe you. Mm-hmm.
Did you say non-alcoholic or alcoholic?
She said nice alcoholic drink.
Alcoholic drink.
Did you say non-alcoholic?
Oh, wow. Non-alcoholic.
I don't know.
Nice non-alcoholic.
Oh, non-alcoholic. Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay. He's on the beach. Yeah. Never mind. Let me not take this further. Pow World. Since you brought up Pow World, let's talk about Pow World. Or actually, were we okay with finishing that conversation of how trash Sega is?
Oh no, I'm done.
Okay.
Are we done?
So Gabe wanted us to talk about Power World, but he's not here, so I'm not going to talk about Power World, because I don't know, like, what he wanted to mention about this. So the article here is that Power World on Xbox doesn't have dedicated servers, limiting co-op to 2 to 4 players, while Steam players get up to 32 players. However, to my knowledge, the Xbox version is a pre-alpha version. I don't know, but the Xbox version is, I believe, 3 iterations earlier than the current PC version. So there are things that are fixed and better on PC than they are on Xbox. But I know that the game has been struggling with dedicated servers for Xbox to the point that, as this article mentions, Xbox can only hold up to 2 players, whereas PC can hold up to 32 players. And they've been going back and forth with Epic Games about. I know they've held emergency meetings with Epic Games with being able to host servers because servers have been down because they've got 4 million players and they weren't expecting this and blah, blah, blah. So we can talk about that, I guess, when Gabe is back. Whenever he's able to come back, we can have that conversation. The only thing I was...
Stay tuned for future episodes, listeners.
Oh, also, Riot Games... tonight, minutes ago, well, a couple, like hours ago at this point... mentioned that they too were confirming that they laid off 530 people, or about 11% of their total workforce, which is 22 days into 2024. At least 3,800 video game layoffs have been reported so far. That is from Kotaku. I not gonna go into that. There have been some more. I don't want this to become the podcast where we discuss who's been laid off this week. But it is January 22nd, and as Kotaku has reported so far, 3,800 video game layoffs have been reported. And, you know, there are some people from Riot that are still finding out that they have been let go currently. And they have a whole press release. We can talk about it next week if you guys want to. We don't have to talk about it now. Some people didn't know. Some of them are still waiting on emails to find out whether they still have a job. But
that's horrible.
Oh yeah. Speaking of this, Bungie, former Bungie devs, are hiring more people now after we talked after about the layoff. So there's that. Bungie is expanding to 1,400 plus employees. I don't have an article for you guys here currently, so it is something else that we can talk about next week if we want to bring that back up. But they are hiring again. And this is why. Yeah. So, Pow World. Last thing I want to talk about is Pow World. I've shown you guys some of my screenshots from Pow World. And I know that you guys haven't played, but a lot of people have been talking about Pow World using AI and how it's not cool and how people should be boycotting the game because everyone's like, oh, AI is bad, but now it's popular and people are okay with it because it's Pal World and it's popular and people that believe that AI is bad are now changing their minds, blah, blah, blah. Only thing I want to say about this is that Pal World has been in development for about 3 or 4 years, and there is no proof that any AI has been used in the creation of Pal World. Now, if that changes, I will update my statement and change my mind. But as of now, there is no proof that Pal World has used AI, especially because it is a game that has been in development. We saw this game years ago, like 3 or 4 years ago. So it is something that they have been working on. It's not like they just, you know, AI generated the entire game and was like, go in like a year. However, my biggest issue with Pal World is not about AI use. It is 1000% about how this game just plagiarizes a million other games. I know you guys haven't played it, so I will try to explain to you some of the plagiarism. I've shown you guys some of the pictures of the Pokemon, like, references. Supposedly, they literally took the models for Pokemon and literally just threw new, like, images over them. I can believe it. Like, I literally, if you play Pal World, you will literally see the Pokemon that each Pal was, like, modeled after. And there's a fine line between inspiration and just fucking stealing it. But
it's like what a lot of people said. They're like, you know, after the third time, you're starting to raise eyebrows. Like the first time, you're like, okay, it's just a coincidence. Second time, you're like, third time and more afterwards, you're like, okay,
yeah,
this is not a coincidence anymore. Like, yeah, stop.
So. Because you guys don't play, there are a lot of things that I've been noticing that I'm just like, yeah, no, this game is not original at all. So aside from the Pokemon that I've sent you, there are some things that stood out to me, which I have to show you guys later, but I did want to bring them up on the podcast so any listeners can tell me if I'm wrong. But the first thing that happens that I noticed that I was like, this is from another game. The chime when you begin and the text whenever you unlock a travel point or go to like an area or something is 1000% stolen from The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. It is the same sound, almost exactly the same sound. I'm literally going to record it for you guys so that you can hear it and confirm this for me. But it is almost exactly the same text look and the same sound. Like when you find I think it's the sound when you find a shrine. It's the same when you find one of the shrines in Pal World. So I was like, weird. Number one, weird. Number two, the axe animation and some of the animations are straight out of fucking Fortnite. I was like, I've seen this before. Like, what is going on? It's I can't even remember my number three. I should have written them all down. I know I had Pokemon and Breath of the Wild and Fortnite. There was another one that I was comparing it to earlier in a conversation when I was at work. Persona? And I can't remember what it was. No. There's no Persona in here. There's no Persona
Final
in here.
Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts, Mario. We can go down the list.
Game.
I mean, they're Fire Emblem.
5 hours later, Chrissy's going to mention Gex the Gecko.
I mean, that might be in there. But there's also, it's so funny because someone's already made a Pokemon mod for Pal World, and it's really funny to see because, like, Pikachu gets a gun. But anyway, so yeah, I think what people, what the conversation should be is how much inspiration versus plagiarism is in video games, because I'm just like, this game is literally just an amalgamation of a bunch of other games that it's just stolen good ideas from and claimed to, you know, be a new entity. But I will say, I understand why Pal World is fun. I decided to try it out for my job, and I played much longer than I actually anticipated. And I have more hours in it than I would like to admit. Like, I get it. I get the rotation. I started building a house, and then my base got invaded, and then we had to, like, beat up all the pals that were coming, and, you know, we grabbed the submachine gun and shot them up, and they died, and then I caught some, and you can catch humans, and if you catch humans, and you're caught, and you hit them, the police are gonna come chase after you, but, like, you can run away from them. It's like, there's so much going on in Pal World that is ridiculous fun. And I think that's why the game has 4 million had 4 million sales in like 3 days, and it's like concurrently one of the highest games on the Steam. It's fun. I hate to admit that Pal World is fun, guys, But Pal World is fun. It is stolen, and it's bad, but it's fun. And if you got Game Pass, I'm not going to tell you to give it a try, but it is on Game Pass. It is an earlier build, but it is on Game Pass, and it might give you a few hours of fun. I hope that we can have another conversation about Pal World later, but for now, I think we're done. It's been about an hour, so we're good to go. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you, Christy. It is the first podcast of 2024 coming at ya. Next time we're here, I think it'll be February, right?
Should be? No, not quite.
No.
Well,
no, it won't be.
It may come out by February.
We will still be in January. So, we'll see you guys in the last week of January. Where we discuss maybe more Pal World. We'll see how my question to you guys was going to be, what is the longevity, do you think, of something like Pal World? But because you guys haven't played it, I can't really, like, ask you a question like that, because you wouldn't know. But I am very curious to see the longevity of a game like Pal World. So I guess we'll discuss it at a later date. And with that, I think we're good. Good night, everybody. Bye.
Bye.